Hello, hello, and welcome to CBET's podcast. We are your hosts, Georgina Piltz
and Ruben Cervantes.
And we want to welcome you to this episode of the CBET's podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about giving extravagantly. Now, you followed us over the past couple of weeks as we've unpacked some of the different truths for us in the foreigner lifestyle. And so today, we're going to be chatting about giving extravagantly. And we have a friend with us, David Park. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Good. So many of you know that giving extravagantly doesn't just mean financially, though that can sometimes be the most painful way to give. It can be our time giving it extravagantly or our resources available to us. But David, you've been here at IHOP for how many years now?
12 years now.
12 years.
Going on 13th year, yeah.
Okay, and you have some incredible stories that we're going to hear over this podcast about people who have given in extravagant ways. But before we get to that, why don't you just tell us how you came to IHOP in the first place?
Yeah, and weren't you like a pastor?
Sure, yeah. I was serving as a pastor in California Bay Area.
Okay. So, ooh, nice and sunny.
Yeah, nice and sunny, 10 months out of the year.
Ooh.
Yeah, you don't even have to check weather. It's like 72.
Yeah.
Yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
So. That's awesome.
That sounds nice.
So, let me back up a little bit. I spent my first 11 years in Seoul, Korea. So I grew up in Seoul, Korea, and spent 27 years in the Bay Area, and now 13 years in Kansas City.
Wow.
So, yeah, I was a pastor of a mega church, Korean mega church in Bay Area.
Oh, wow.
And our church was engaged with IHOP in one thing for 2 years before I came, actually.
Oh, wow.
And for 2 years, we've been sending our young adults, maybe 40, 50 at a time, would pay half of their cost to be at one thing, and they came back. The really fascinating thing is they came back and started House of Prayer right away.
Wow.
And they went on for like 3 years, I found out later, from 10 p.m. to 12 midnight, sometimes 1, 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's awesome.
All young adults, professionals, you know, in the marketplace, still running the House of Prayer Monday through Friday. So that really created a big buzz in our church.
That's incredible.
Man, that's sacrificial.
Yeah,
that's
that message really got a hold of their hearts. So what made you move to IHOP, Casey?
So again, for about 2 years, our church, we have a really good feel about the IHOP, and we've encouraged people to go because they come back changed. We saw positive changes in their lives. So we wanted to always, you know, visit, and our family never had a chance to actually visit, although we were sending people and all this. So we thought, you know, maybe one day. And my wife comes up to me one day. This is back in 2007. She goes, you know, honey, we should really spend some time praying as a family. Our daughters were 13 and 6 at the time, two daughters. And I told her, that's a great idea. We should do that. And I'm thinking, go to like prayer mountains. We have Santa Cruz prayer mountains and different expressions. So I was thinking about that. But she goes, no, let's go to IHOP.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then she brought it up, and I said, well, that's great. But, you know, it will cost us some money to get there. So, you know, if this is really from the Lord, we'll wait to see if he will provide.
Mm-hmm.
$2,000 check shows up in the mail next day, 24
hours,
out of nowhere, saying, you know, and then we get a phone call. You know, we meant to send this out to you 3 months ago, but we forgot to. Never expected this check to come, so we used that to come here, do the weekends at IHOP. We fall in love, and but still, it was not in our heart to actually move here at the time, but we had a great visit.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
And then what compelled you to finally say, we're going?
Well, during the weekends at IHOP, they take you through different ministries and love on you, feed you, and we went through the prophecy rooms.
Oh, okay.
And we went in as a family, and the first thing that person, one of the three people asked me was, are you a pastor? And at the time I was, and I said, yes. And he goes, you know, I don't know if I should tell you this, but I feel like Jesus wants to spend 3 days with you, and he's still waiting for you. And that may not have meant anything to other people, but I told myself I'm going to go there and spend 3 days with Jesus, and like fasting and praying, seeking. And I didn't get to do that because I was in a program with my family. They feed you, and didn't get to really pray much at all. And then that really struck me. So I thought, I need to do this. Like Jesus is waiting for me. So I came back, locked myself in my church office, and spent 3 days.
Wow.
And, you know, except having to go to the restroom.
Yeah.
And Jesus just, you know, I mean, met me and made it very clear that we should take our family to come to IHOP.
Wow. Wow.
For a season. I'm thinking, you know, to get trained, you know, bring back the fire. Because we are considered a praying church. Mm-hmm. We had 11 praying initiatives.
Oh, wow.
I was leading some of them, and I wanted to really bring back the fire into my own heart and to our church.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, we're going to go get trained.
Yeah.
You know, so fast forward a few things. We got the permission, told the church and told people, and we are here for 3 months, thinking after 3 months, we're just going to go back and bring back the fire.
It's the story of most people I've heard. I'm going for 3 weeks, guys. I'll be back.
But 1 month into the program, God made it crystal clear to me through the scripture that we are to stay and join. And I felt immediately that it was going to be for long term.
Come on.
And I'm you know, trepidating to tell my wife. Mm-hmm. I know my wife hears from the Lord, and she loves the program. But, you know, she's a California girl. She's wearing the winter coat in the house, outside the house, in the seminar room, outside, you know.
That's great.
And she loved it, but she's ready to go home. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how do I bring this up to my wife? So I bring it up to her one-on-one. And she goes, she kind of chuckles and says, you know, I had a dream 2 days ago that we are to stay here long term.
Wow.
And I was just waiting for you. So, yeah, that's how
the
journey began.
Isn't it great when both the husband and wife feel something from the Lord and
I know.
He just stamps it in such a great way?
I know. And awesome. And of course, you've been serving in the partner donor development department here, of course, focused particularly on the Cyrus Partners, which are, you know, some of our more high-level donors that are more you know, they're more involved in terms of partnering with us financially. And so the reason I wanted you to come here is because I actually already know David. You know, I know that you he's an incredible facilitator, teacher. You know, he was one of our best, but he had to travel some more, and so we were sad to lose
fired.
Yeah, no, you were promoted, but I still love seeing you around our CBETS leadership team. But we know that, you know, the reason the Lord is asking you to do this is because you're connecting with others around the nation and different places. And so, I know you have stories. You know, I think about Malachi, right? Malachi talks, that's where the famous, you know, test me and see if I will not open the, you know, gates of heaven or whatever. And then, of course, we know in the New Testament, there's this, you know, God loves a cheerful giver. And then because, you know, God hasn't, you know, he has canceled the written code, but he fulfilled the law. There's these arguments of whether we should tithe. I mean, this is a long conversation that is still because it's touching our comfort levels.
Yes.
And so, you know, should you tithe the net? Should you tithe the growth? It's questions like that come up all the time. And then at the end of the day, it's just limiting the generosity of the saints. But we're not talking about 10%. We're talking extravagance here. You know, whether you're wealthy, whether you are struggling, the principle still applies that we are called. And if you want to advance your journey in spiritual growth, you can't grow without giving extravagantly. Right. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean painfully. You know, it doesn't feel good.
Right.
You know,
I mean, I just look at the first example in the Bible, not the first, but the clearest picture of giving extravagantly is when the father gave his son. What more could the father give to display love and affection
That's
to the
right.
world? And so when you put it in that perspective, you're like, okay, I have a bit of extra cash. I have a bit of extra time. I can give this to somebody. If it hurts a little bit, surely that's nowhere near as painful as giving my own son,
right.
you know? So.
Right. No, that's so good. So David, why don't you tell us some stories? We know you have some.
Yeah. So before I get into that, I just wanted to define the word extravagant in terms of Webster. It says, you know, unreasonable, almost unhealthy expense of resources.
Wow.
It's like, apparently to most people, when you see an example, it seems unreasonable. But that's what extravagant means to the rest of the world. You know, I gotten permission to share this story of a man who was driving down the road just in his early 20s, just got a job and trying to feed his family, put, you know, food on the table. That's about the extent of his thought at the time. He had a child at the time. And Holy Spirit whispers to him, in fact, speaks to him with a loud voice and says, I'm calling you to be able to give away millions of dollars.
Wow. Whoa.
And again, he's just driving down the road. He's got this new job. He's trying to put food on the table. He you know, asked, what do you mean?
Am I
I'm going to give away millions of dollars. And Holy Spirit goes, I'm going to cause you to give away millions of dollars.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't know how, he didn't know when, but he just said, Lord, if this is from you, I'm just going to say yes and be obedient to how you're calling me. Mm. That was it. And, you know, 25 years later, he's literally giving away millions of dollars.
Come
you know,
on.
He ended up starting a business that turned into a company, hundreds of employees. And,
wow.
and there was this supernatural wealth generation that he was connected to that the Lord led him to.
Wow.
Now, but the thing that that struck to me was that because he had this conversation 25 years ago,
mm-hmm.
when the opportunities came for him to be able to give away that millions of dollars, he did not question.
Right.
He did not think through. It was clear that this was from the Lord.
Right.
Wow.
Because the Lord has spoken it so clearly, there was
yes,
no way of
yes,
denying.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
Yes.
How beautiful.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I have another story because you said in the beginning, Georgina, that extravagance doesn't always mean finances.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, really time, our talent, and our treasure. So another story is that this guy had a pack with his family. So every time they go on a road travel, whenever they see a stalled car, they will stop to find out if they are, you know, need help changing the tire or whatever. So they kept up this tradition ever since the kids were young and, you know, they became like in their early 20s. So one day, and they did this every time. One day, they're passing by this stalled car. And the daughter asked, Dad, why are we passing by this one? Because
yeah.
she's so used to seeing her dad stopping and helping to change tires or whatever. So they go back and, you know, help her. And it turned out to be a young lady. And, you know, they needed a tire change. So he helps her with that and needed something else. So really helps her to get help with the local shop and get it really all fixed up.
Mm-hmm.
And follows up with her, you know, with his wife over the years. Within 1 year time frame, you know, she was originally a non-believer when this happened. And after a year of just following up with her, just discipling her, she becomes a believer.
Whoa.
Wow, so that's amazing.
A missed opportunity. They could have just passed by, but we have a person who's gone from death to life and newness of life just because he was generous with his time and talent. Yeah.
I mean, stopping at the side of the road, often when you're in a car, you're going somewhere.
Yes.
So it's going to be a delay and an annoyance to stop on the side of the road. It could be a ton of work that they need. So that is definitely extravagant patience on my end. I don't know if I could do that.
Yeah. Wow, that's so cool. Well, what other nuggets do you have for us?
Well, I mean, there are a ton of stories that I could share, but one story that I want to share is, actually, I've seen this 5 or 6 times. So we go visit these major donors who fund the prayer movement, and when you go visit them, you realize right away that they're not just simply writing a check.
Mm.
They're absolutely just deeply embedded into the reality of prayer. So they give time to their expression of prayer. In fact, the one story is that the CEO has built a house of prayer expression in his building. And it's actually his office.
Okay.
Whoa.
And one day the Lord showed up and asked him, you know, they just moved into this new building, quite extensive building. And he asks him, you know, wow, you know, you have a nice office. Yes, Lord. You know, he came with the building. And then Lord asks, so why is your office so big? And he goes, I don't know, Lord. It came with the building. And the third thing, you know, the Lord addresses is, would you give your office to me? Mm. Would you give this space for me? And his response was, why, of course, Lord. Everything I have belongs to you. Of course I'll give it to you. So he turns it into a house of prayer. He's got a drum cage, you know, stage, sofa, and chairs. And people actually come during lunchtime. And he's actually hired people to run it. And in the evenings, people come from the community.
Wow.
And he's giving himself to this expression so that he can have the presence of God in that place to impact his company and other visitors and so on and so forth. He's actually sitting in a cubicle. All his VPs have their own office. But again, it's just examples of giving time and even office space, talent, and treasure.
Yeah.
We can do that. And I've seen extravagance in that over and over.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, just thinking of a guy who's high up, we know King David. He had a ton of money. He was the king. Yes. Yet he gave a ton of his wealth and resources to set a dwelling place for the Lord and then hire musicians and singers to be in that place to worship the Lord. And we're even part of that now, aren't we? Where we are, we see singers and musicians who are, in one sense, giving extravagantly of their time every week to sit and minister before the Lord. And where else can you find that in the earth? Yes, we know that there are thousands of houses of prayer all around the world, but only in a God-given setting can people give extravagantly of their time.
Absolutely. And you're referring to 1 Chronicles 23, 24 to 6 and 27, where David really amassed, in today's gold and silver value, over $200 million in gold and silver alone, not counting the bronze and different materials.
Yeah.
Gave $6 billion out of his own pocket. The generals gave $25 million out of their own pocket. And there was so much offering that they told people to stop bringing offering. I mean, wouldn't that be amazing? And I have
stop.
Maybe we should present this to the state, you know, be like, hey, can we put this $6 billion into the where the money goes?
And he said, and actually one of the major donors was really touched by this when I shared. And the Lord said through David, for the house of the Lord must be exceedingly magnificent in fame and glory. And that's just not talking about the building, but the 24,000 people who said yes to the invitation of King David. And we're going to stand before the Lord, minister to the Lord as singers and musicians, gatekeepers. They had security personnel. They had house cleaning staff in Chronicles. And all of these people serving as director of treasury, dedicated gifts. But yet every one of them were Levites, meaning their primary occupation was ministering before the Lord.
Yeah.
This amazes me of that kind of extravagance toward the Lord.
That's so cool.
I'm inspired by that, of course. I want to talk a little bit more on the financial piece. And the reason I do is because the way the economies have shifted, meaning like back in the day, there was a lot of bartering. There was ways to gain and to invest that was related to, I'm a carpenter, you're a plumber, so let's exchange services. I'll build this for you. You come and install this plumbing, you know, whatever. That idea, obviously, plumbing is a relatively new thing. But the point is that idea is bartering. That's how you advanced, right? Mm-hmm. That's how you purchased food sometimes. There was money exchange, of course, but there was it was a mixed bag. It wasn't just financially driven. Whereas here, everything, most of what we do is a transfer of some sort of financial, meaning monetary transfer of wealth in order, here, I want this, so I'll give you this, and you give me that. You know, that's how it's happening. And so the way we experience the loss of money or the investment of resource is typically through the giving financially. And the reason I want to talk about this and why I want to focus on financial giving is because we see the Harlot Babylon system at the end of the age is not just a religious system. It's not just a political system. It is a financial economic system. I mean, and then you think about Jesus when he said, you know, you can't serve two masters. You either have God or money. Like, and so there is no other contender to God other than money. So money is important to talk about. And so I wanna address this because what I've learned in my personal life, you know, I've never been wealthy. I mean, and maybe I will someday. I'm not saying it's bad to be wealthy. Praise God for the wealthy believers. But in my
but it's all relative. You are wealthier than 75%
of the world. Yeah. Thanks for that. Yeah, that's very true. Yes. I mean, compared to many villages and of course my own family in Latin America. I remember they were getting paid $13 a day. You know, now they got upgraded. Now they're making about $150 a week. I mean, and so they're doing better. You know, the economy's getting stronger, but still, I mean, that's ridiculously low. But the reason I'm sharing this is because I've still been called by God to be an extravagant giver. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the only way forward to make sure I don't have an evil eye, as the Proverbs say, right? And so I wanna address this. What thoughts can you give us related to giving of our finance?
So a couple of thoughts come to me. First of all, you mentioned the tithing and the 10%. And I just want to address that a little bit, if I may, and then try and answer your question. So I always ask people, did the tithing come before Abraham or after Abraham? You know, of course, they kind of look back, you know, after, you know, they kind of, you know, Genesis. Okay. So you find that the giving of 10% principle preceded the tithing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When Abraham gave 10% to Melchizedek. And so that was an act of acknowledging that everything belongs to the Lord. And it was an act of worship. And so I just want to make four points. One is what we do in the Cyrus Partners Department, which is Major Donor Development Department. We make sure we understand as staff, and we help people to understand. And they already know this, many of them, but some of them, this is new. First and foremost, Bible makes it abundantly clear that God owns everything and he needs nothing.
Right.
Yeah. Sometimes we approach people as ministries, oh, we need this, we need to do this, we need to do this project. But really, God needs nothing and he owns everything. That is principle number one that we try to teach ourselves and others. Second, if that is true, and the Bible is, you know, Psalm 24 says, you know, the earth is the Lord and the fullness thereof, the people who dwell in it. And Job 41:10-11 says, who has given to me that I should pay him back?
Wow.
Everything under the heavens is mine.
Right.
You know, he just kind of settles the issue. And he also goes on to say, the heavens are yours, the earth is yours, and everything in it is yours. And the Bible just completely settles that issue. And we don't really think about it often, but it is true that God owns everything. He needs nothing. Which brings us to the second point. If that is true, we as people, we own nothing. And we need everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's principle number two. You know, John 3:27 says, no one can claim that they have anything unless it is given him from above,
right. Yeah.
Basically. So it really settles that issue. Then it brings us to the third point. If those are true, then we know that God is the sole provider of all resources. And which brings us to the last point, which is that same God also wants his stewards to manage his resources well, and to deploy them to fund and sustain and advance kingdom works.
Right. Uh-huh.
So if we understand those principles, and it really communicates, this is communicated when we acknowledge them, and we don't really actually thank them, believe it or not. We actually say we thank them for their obedience to the Lord in their stewardship assignment. So we start to have these types of conversations. So going back to your question, you know, we celebrate large donations, obviously, but also we celebrate amazing extravagance showing in faithful giving. I called up a lady who gave $2 on credit card while we were doing the spring drive campaign, and we have real-time data as to what is coming in. $2. And I thought, there is a story behind this lady, so I called her up. And she was touched by One Thing Conference a couple of years ago. She always wanted to give, but she couldn't afford on a fixed income.
Wow.
And she saw this program and the invitation, the call to action. And she said, I'm going to do something about it, and gave $2.
Wow, that was like beautiful.
Beautiful in the sight of God.
Gosh.
There's another lady who actually gives $4 a month by check every month for like 7 years. I actually think that she can only afford $5, and $1 is for postage and handling.
Wow.
And she writes a check for $4 every month for 7 years. You know, that is precious to the Lord. That is extravagant to the Lord.
Yeah, I love that.
Wow.
I mean, it's the widow with the two coins, right? The two minus.
Absolutely.
And so where everything is given, nothing is lacking, right? And so God measures our gift by the extravagance of it, the entirety, rather than, you know, because the whole accusation is, you know, the Pharisees like giving a ton of money, right? And he's like, look at me, I'm holy.
Mm-hmm.
And here the widow is only able to give, you know, a couple of coins that really doesn't do anything, but it was what she had.
Absolutely.
And God said that because I own it all anyway.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But that you're giving, that moved his heart.
Yes. Yes. All he asks of us is our heart of obedience. In fact, you mentioned economy. comes from the Greek word. I'm not a Greek scholar. I don't pretend to be. But two compound words, oikonomia. And oikos means household or family. Nomia means rule of law and order. So household management is rendered to translate this word. And that's the word. This is the word for stewardship. Okay. So at the essence of our stewardship as givers is the essence of managing God's resources, God's household management.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Is what stewardship really means. And what I find often is that our major donors understand that. They have this intrinsic understanding, even before we get to them, that they are being stewards of God's massive resources.
Yeah.
Gosh, they're just obeying.
I mean, that's
absolutely
so inspirational.
Obedience, yes.
So what would you say to a 24-year-old, you know, single? What does it look like to give extravagantly?
So first thing I would say to a 24-year-old is to settle your issue if you struggle with this. Some people may not. But if you struggle with the issue of fear, you know, really if the fear of lack, fear of not having enough, fear of not providing for the young family, all of these concerns are rooted in fear. So if you lay down... I even tell people to write down the list of your greatest fears. What are you afraid of? You know, I was once afraid of being homeless. You know, God took us through various seasons where we had so much that we gave, you know, were able to give so much. And yet, you know, God took us through two valley seasons. One of those fears was, what if our family becomes homeless? It was a real fear. I gave it to the Lord. I gave it to my family. Family, I don't want this fear to be part of my family. We want to give it to the Lord and see what he will do. And we did. And God brought us back out of that. I mean, gave us six times more than where we were and restored all that. And it was as if God was saying, do you trust me?
Mm.
At the end of the day, all of us, when it comes to finances, when we face lack, we are faced with fear. And the Lord is asking, do you trust me?
Right.
Will you surrender your fear to me?
Right.
And then if you did that, then you would not tap into, you know, other sources, you know, other plastics, other swiping of plastics, other sources other than God being our sole provider.
Right.
So that's what I would tell a 24-year-old to.
Come on.
Bring your issue of fear to the Lord and ask yourself, do I really trust the Lord for my provision or not?
Yeah.
Good.
Do you think that applies to maybe a young family in their 30s, 40s? You know, like you were mentioning, the man driving the car, you know, just putting food on the table. It's this, you know, paycheck to paycheck lifestyle.
Right.
Would you say the same or would you add to it?
I believe the call is individual. So, you know, when we hear about these stories, it inspires us. We want to, you know, really strive and reach for more that God has for us. And he does. But I would say that calling and the destiny in terms of our financial wealth generation, it looks different for each person. So it's, I think, important to hear from the Lord because we are his sheep.
Yeah.
His sheep hear his voice.
Yes.
And to recognize the voice of the shepherd and follow in his footsteps.
Yeah, that's very helpful because I also think about like people who are a little bit more wealthy, you know. I remember when I was a younger man, because I'm young still, but I was involved with securities and, you know, I was doing financial services of different kinds. And I would run into these people with a ton of money, you know, and they're needing a rollover of their 401k resource into a different thing or different things like that. And I always wondered, like, God, how do you see this? Like, When is it seed money? When is it bread money? Mm-hmm. You know, when is it meaning? When is it time to consume this? And when is it time to invest? And then on the investment side, like when do you invest in kingdom work? Or how much do you invest in kingdom work? And how much do you invest in growing your you know, storage or your amount so that you can invest more into kingdom work? You know,
it's a good question.
By hearing what you were saying, it's like it's case by case scenario. What is God saying to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And God gives us the principle in 2 Corinthians 9 where it talks about the seed money and the bread money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the Seven Commitments of a Foreigner, Mike mentions this, that, you know, whoever sows sparingly will reap sparingly.
Right.
And he also shares from Luke 6, you know, give and it shall be given unto you. That's in the context of giving mercy, but we can still apply it to, you know, the finances.
Yeah.
So what I would say is, when God suddenly gives you unusual finance, or even if you have little, you know, extra $20, you know, that month, ask the Lord about it. Lord, is this, you know, bread money for our family, or is this seed money to be sown away? That we've been practicing this principle for about 16 years now, and it helped our family so much to go through the confusion of how or where. You may see the immediate need to, sow into or take care of some bills or whatever, but it is, I think, important to ask the Lord about it.
Yeah.
Not every expenditure, but, you know, there's some, you know, expenditure that, you know, that God wants you to have conversations with him about.
Yeah.
And those are the times when you say, Lord, would you have me sow this, or would you have me use this as bread money? And God has surprised us many times. What I thought would be the right answer, and he surprised us many times.
Yeah, most people so think that if, you know, because there's those meetings like, right now, ask the Lord how much he would have you give, and everyone's afraid to ask because they're like, oh man, he might say what I don't want to give. But you make a great point. It's like, well, first of all, if you're feeling that, you're probably afraid of something, and God doesn't give a spirit of fear. And second of all, like, you know, it just depends. And, you know, he can be trusted.
Yes, you just have to have the loose hand approach. Remember, you own nothing. He owns everything. Yeah. You're only a steward.
Yeah.
Oikonomia is the word that we're from which we get the word economy.
Right.
Economy is, the definition of Webster is the wealth and resources of a nation or region, especially dealing with manufacturing, production, and consumption of goods and services. So that's a secular version.
Right.
And another version says, careful management, this is Webster, careful management of available resources.
Wow.
So that's a little closer.
Yeah.
But again, the biblical definition is that the definition of economy is rooted in stewardship.
Yeah.
It is the management of God's household.
Yeah.
Finances and resources.
You know, I picked up a couple lessons from my parents. I mean, obviously it taught me a lot. But my mom grew up very poor. I mean, garbage colony, you know, very, very poor. And she always said, honey, she actually, when I was young, and I was just energetic, and I was like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to make money, because we were living in a, you know, I grew up in a trailer court, and just, you know, whatever. And I told her, I'm going to get us out of the situation, and she stopped me. She's like, come with me. And she goes to the sink, turns it on, and she says, put your hands and try to hold this water as long as you can.
Wow.
And I mean, you know, it was like, several seconds later, I couldn't hold the water. It's like money is like water in the hands. You only have a short amount of time to obey God of how to use it. And to try to store it is not a good plan, because it's just going to leave.
Wow.
You know, that's what she taught me. You know, that was,
really,
was
a wise.
That was really.
Seriously.
And then my dad, okay, this is a crazy lesson. I got to share this story, because I remember in my 20s, early 20s. So we were in a season when, for the economy purpose, different things, my brother, my mom, and my dad all lost their job within the same week.
Mm.
Okay. And so it was a very difficult economic situation. Well, 2 weeks before, a friend who worked at a door company making front doors, wanted to gift my dad a new door. So he came and installed it, and the other door, we didn't know what to do with it yet, so we put it in the back near our shed. Well, behind our house is a trailer park, right? And we lived in a double wide at the time. And so I remember a man knocks on our door when they had lost their job and says, hey, I noticed you had this spare door. I need a spare door. I would like to purchase it from you. And my father said, oh, don't worry about it. Take it. And I'm like, I know the situation.
Yeah.
Obviously, the man doesn't. But I, when he gave it away, I didn't want to question my father, because similar to Asian culture, you know, you respect your elders. But then in private,
that's
I'm
right.
like, Father,
what did you do?
But I was like, Father, that was not very wise stewardship. Like, we are in need. Clearly, God sent provision through this. And he's like, he said this, son, have I taught you nothing? I was like, I started laughing. But I was like, no, for real. He said that. And he said, like, you know, I've been walking with God for a long time, he said. And he said, God never keeps anything. You know, he doesn't need our stuff.
He gives and takes away.
Yeah.
He owns everything.
He owns everything. He doesn't. But the point is, like, it's not like when you give to him, he's like, you lose it. It's like, no, when you give to him, he takes care of you.
Yeah.
And in this situation, I knew that I was supposed to help this man. And he took me to the back, see where he lives. And he showed me his house, which was inferior to our home. And he's like, why would I do that? You know, because I'm suffering, make others who are in less comfortable situations suffer more. Like, and so it instilled a value system in me that I couldn't produce on my own.
Wow.
And just to realize that there's a bigger narrative going on, that when we're experiencing financial pressures, when we're feeling lack, we don't stop tithing. We don't stop right. being generous. We don't, you know, because that's the first reaction is we want to hoard, we want to keep, we want to, protect what we have. And my dad's response, which could be excessive, I got to make sure that there's a caveat here, but my dad's response was like, no, this is the time when we get to give even more, because it's wow. sacrificial giving, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, to me, what I understand is giving extravagantly.
Come yeah, on. So I was part of this retreat called Journey of Generosity. I'm actually a certified facilitator, so I've done 7 of these. And in the first thing we ask is, remember, just come up with your earliest memory before the age of 12 when you were touched by a story of generosity or example of generosity. So we had our, you know, we're thinking about our memories. So I grew up with a very similar dad who was a third generation Christian, and he was extravagant in giving, so much so that, and you know, back in the early 70s, he was a paycheck earner at a company, and I think he was making $400 a month at that time in the early 70s in Korea. And back then, you didn't get a check. You actually got an envelope with cash, with coins in it, you know, from wow. the accounting department.
Right.
You get this envelope of paycheck or pay cash. And he will bring that home. And often, he would give that whole envelope away to someone who had need or someone who was poor or was homeless. And you have to understand, that whole bag, you live on it. You pay right. bills, you buy groceries. You know. And my dad will often give that whole thing away.
Wow.
And
wow.
he, as long as God made it clear that he was supposed to do that. Mm-hmm. And of course, my mom would find out about it, and they had a intense discussion about what just
intense
happened.
Intense fellowship, yeah.
yeah, intense fellowship. But each and every time that happened, I remember God came through. And he had other income that he did not expect in terms right. of, you know, either bonus or some extra pay, or just God just came through, and he made right. sure that I knew that growing up. So I was marked by that. Gosh. And in fact, his salary just skyrocketed. Starting 1975, he got a job that had to do with international contracts. And he was making amount of money, I think, compared to what I'm making now, I think he was making more back then.
Wow.
So it was
wow.
tremendous growth in his wow. income just by being faithful
yeah.
to what the Lord would put on his heart.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You can never outgive God, can you?
Absolutely.
I think Mike said that a number of
Mike
times
says
through the
that.
Stories.
Guy Morris says that.
It's
I mean, not
awesome.
Guy Morris. Robert Morris says
right,
that.
Right, right.
Yes.
It's just, I love holding on to
yes,
that. I'm
absolutely.
Like, I can never outgive you, even if it hurts right now. You're always going to give back to me. And I think just even thinking of in a more miraculous term, it's like, okay, I have $100, I'm going to tithe, and then I'm going to give away. Okay, I have $50, but I need $100 in groceries. The Lord can somehow stretch that $50 to cover more than you need, including the gas
absolutely.
For the car and the whatever.
Mike is and absolutely so, right on that.
Yeah. And so I'm like, somehow we have to change our thinking to, a dollar in my hand means a dollar of groceries. It's like, no, the way that the Lord works is completely other than. He is a miraculous working God, and he can make 10 cents stretch to 100 in any way he wants. And,
yeah.
and so I think I'm like, oh, I need to change my economic thinking
Absolutely.
To make it the way of the Lord.
Yes. But
the bread and awesome. Fish principle, you know?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And one more story I have to share as we bring this to a close, just because I know many of you may have places of influence where you can impact other people. But you mentioned this story of remember your earliest memory of generosity.
Yes.
And I remember my dad, you know, in Mexico, my dad was and my grandfather. But my father took over the business when I was a young boy. I grew up, I can't even remember, but probably until I was 8 years old in Mexico. And my dad was a farmer, right? So he grew okra. And, you know, there would be hundreds of laborers that would migrate from the south, from, you know, different parts, different mountain villages, to come and earn some income. And, you know, you'd pay the daily wage. So that's how I did my math. I was the kid who paid the daily wage. That's how my dad taught me math.
That's so cool.
But I remember one time, because there's a lot of dons like this who owned land and grew stuff that hired workers. But my dad was the only one who would give each of them a hammock when they first came. Because, you know, they just slept in the woods or out in the open because they don't have houses. There's no housing for right. these laborers. But my dad would give them a hammock so they wouldn't be bitten by spiders and that kind of thing. But nobody else did that. And then he would always also bring, not, you know, because everyone had to take their own water, figure all that out. But he would bring his own. And I'm like, Dad, you're cutting. You know, I remember thinking as a little kid, like, why would you do that when they don't do that? You know,
right.
And of course, as an adult, I'm thinking that's cutting into your profit margins. But I remember, again, that's my first experience to realize, like, you know, the stewardship of resource doesn't just look like giving to a kingdom initiative or to some directly Christian something. It looks like how we care for our neighbor, for those that we have influence over. You know, so we have the ability to mow our neighbor's lawn. We have the ability
Absolutely.
To, you know, rake the, you know, our neighbor's lawn or do things like this that are inconvenient. They take away from our time. That's part of being an extravagant giver. And I just remember that really stuck with me, and the importance of it, of serving other people, of sharing what you have to help others. And the funny thing is that he gained such loyalty from that without thinking about it, because then they knew, oh, that's the good master. That's the
right.
good boss. You know, we want to work for that guy, you know, and that and all that sort of thing. So I really just feel that that's, I think, a call to all of us,
yeah.
you know, that regardless of where we're involved or what we're doing, you can always share a helping hand to your neighbor, to a friend, to someone who's struggling with childcare. You can help them if they trust you.
if they trust you,
those kinds of things. This is what it means to live generously.
Yeah, no, it really does. And the Lord is calling you to live generously in any way that you have the means to do so. David, thank you for joining us and sharing some of these amazing stories. So
my pleasure.
Provoking.
Yeah,
super
for
enriching,
me.
For real.
There's so many stories that I wish I shared, but I had so much fun sharing them.
Oh,
good. Thank you so much. Now, if you, our listeners, have enjoyed what you've learned and enjoyed what you've heard and it's brought life to your heart, go ahead and share these with your friends, with your families. We want life to be spread all across the nations through these podcasts. So go ahead and share them.
And if you're watching YouTube or Facebook, make sure you put your comments and let us know how this impacted you. What this means to you, offer some questions or other comments. That would really bless us.
Yeah, for real. So again, if you haven't seen our previous podcast, go find us on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, any outlet that you have. And we look forward to seeing you next Friday, 2 p.m. Central Time.
Peace.